Okay, at this point, I'll be talking a little bit about age patterns and eligibility versus actual use, and that's what David was alluding to that we could do, and we did some small testing of that and found that it was indeed feasible. One of the things before I get into this is that the nature of brokered services and the nature of documentation of services is no different than any other agency data. It gets better with age. So the more recent years are much better than some of the past years. So we really do feel that the data that's coming up now, as well as the last 2 years, are probably the most fruitful data for us to do some of our most critical analyses. So hopefully we'll see opportunities for even suggesting additional data that could be incorporated into this important and growing data set. We've already gone over the issue of the demographics of the states, but as you might expect, there's far greater numbers of people who are eligible for the service than actually use the service, and you see the eligible Medicaid patients and the users who used at least one trip during that period of time, 2010. There's a little bit of loss with people coming in and out of this, but I think we can use that as a referent. So in other words, we have 158,117 eligible and 16,000 users. So by all means, you figured out by now we're talking about Delaware. Okay. And then what I want to do is go over some basic bivariate associations and talk about its implications. We've already covered this table, but it shows you two pieces of information that are new. One is the users of both states. And you can see that the percentages are not all that different between the two states. So you begin to see some patterns that I think will hold up no matter what state we go into. There's a constancy there that I think will be of value to talk about some general findings across the country eventually. One of the things that's very interesting is the very, very young were a little bit of a blip in terms of use of services, and we sometimes have excluded those individuals because of the nature of that blip. However, going back into this, there's some rural-urban differences that, for the sake of not imposing on Matthew's discussion, I'll go over that and let you talk about that later. Okay. Let's go to the users as percent of eligibility. What you're looking at here is by age group, the number of actual people who used that service at least one trip in that year, 2010, to those who were eligible, defined by the definitions that we talk about, and so it's always a subset of the eligibility. One pattern that becomes quite clear is that the percent of users to eligibility increases linearly with chronological age. And it becomes quite clear that a large percentage of older adults are using this that were eligible. You can interpret this in a number of ways, but clearly one of them is that the service is much more needed by an older adult than compared to other age individuals, even within the eligibility requirements. So that's something of value to pursue and understand in more detail. Then we kind of pursued among the individuals whether or not there are other demographic patterns on user versus eligibility. And you do see some slight differences, but not profoundly different in terms of gender. And if we were to look at this at rural-urban user versus eligibility, you do see that urban compared to rural was slightly higher, but again, not really significant. Okay. So what you saw was a steep gradient by age, but no real differences by gender or other demographic characteristics that I presented there. Within state analysis on eligibility could be done longitudinally. It would be interesting, for instance, we've talked about this on many occasions, and this is a great reason why we have Ken with us, about the nature of how eligibility comes into play and how eligibility can change or people become aware of the service and it becomes a snowballing kind of thing to where when you first start a program and how you announce it could change the nature of the very group of people who become eligible and use the service. So it would be rather interesting to compare that over time to see if those factors are related to the nature of the ratio of eligibility to users, which is of interest in terms of how you control or how they seem to have affected the nature of the ratio. There's also the possibility of very regional differences, even within a state. Most importantly is the notion of rural versus urban, but there are others that are of value there to pursue. And I would really enjoy the possibility, for instance, of looking at some extreme cases of people who are in frontiers, if you will, areas where it's literally 70, 80, 100 miles to the nearest healthcare provider. And then consistency of the demographic patterns across states. That would be interesting in many regards because of the nature of how the demographics play out for one group versus another. Should show some consistency, and if they don't, that would be of interest. And we have a thing called scope of work, and that is the nature of the relationship of the contract with the state, what they will and will not provide. And it's rather interesting that no one has really played out how a contract for a service in the community for transportation could actually affect the nature of the population who are served and whether or not scope of work is a way of limiting the nature of how many people become users or disparities in terms of access to transportation. Again, a very critical kind of question to ask. And then we've also had some thoughts with discussions with CDC and looking at chronic disease state profiles and or the behavioral risk factor surveillance data to see if there's, because we do have zip code data, we could possibly start taking a look at the nature of the distribution of chronic conditions to the nature of the eligibility versus use. And again, that would be very fascinating to see if there are we've talked about food deserts, we could say transportation deserts, if you will, for this kind of service. Okay, the number of trips, the frequency and length of trips and reasons for this and level of service. I'm going to highlight very quickly some of the other kinds of bivariate associations we reported. And we have reported this at a pre-conference workshop in Washington, D.C. in January to a number of people, including people who have some say in the nature of how policy is generated from this data. So we were very pleased that we had an impact on that level, too. Okay. One of the things that might seem obvious to you but was very complicated is what actually constitutes a trip. And a trip is one in which it's a completed unit of transportation, but the legs, the number of legs to a trip, most people think of a round trip, go to the doctor and come back. Well, many of the trips are one way. Many of the trips are as much as 8 legs long. And it's rather interesting to better understand how these legs are related to the patterns of use by individuals. It's important, though, that you recognize that the vast, vast majority are single leg or round trip. There's very few multi legs. However, with our literature review, I'm just embellishing here for a second, if you wouldn't mind. With our literature review, we found that certain kinds of other transportation should be incorporated that go beyond just NEMT, that are possible services that would help round out the health and well-being of the individual, including a trip to the pharmacy and the need for trip to social situations where they have social engagement, as an example of that. Okay. When we go into this, you see on the bottom there that 91% was round trip or 92%. What's important here is that there's patterns in the round trip, and I won't go into a lot of detail, but you see that the oldest old have a number of trips that are comparable to the younger old, and not much to speak of there. That's why I didn't do any analyses. Reason for trip was important. Here's a case where we're looking at dialysis, mental health, and other types of issues. And what's a value that's not shown here, it is in a way, the total users versus the older adults. you'll see certain kinds of chronic conditions pop out as you reasons for a trip. And what's critical, things like dialysis was clearly important for these individuals, where it's less frequent for the younger populations. So we do have some patterns here. One thing that we noted in thinking about this data and trying to translate what it means, we also noticed that the proportion of trips for mental health reasons were considerably below what we know to be the prevalence of mental health issues in the population. So we have some sort of indication that there is a underutilization for that. However, it's rather tricky because, as you know, older adults have multiple chronic conditions and they could be going in for more than one reason, and mental health is a subset of a larger problem, say like dialysis. So this is a little tricky when you try to interpret this off the cuff. So summary of reasons for trip, all trips, dialysis was relatively common. A little bit more common in one state, 40%, than and 11% in Delaware versus 8% in Oklahoma of all the trips. The majority of the trips with Delaware of all the deaths were for dialysis. It was really an eye-opener, and we were told that this is the sleeping giant, if you will, among the researchers. The need for dialysis, especially among rural elderly, is one in which requires considerable attention because of the consequences without access to that kind of service. So it is one that provides some empirical or some basic epidemiological support that there is a issue they are waiting for someone to really attend to. Level of service, this is rather fascinating because we shouldn't assume that it's just riding a cab or getting in a bus or getting someone to drive you in their car that is going to happen. It's also that the level of frailty of the individual also contributes to that. And with older adults, there's a greater proportion of people who need wheelchair service and stretcher service. And there tends to be a nice linear trend with that that I'd like to show you. I think the picture says better than the numbers. What you're looking here at is chronological age by the nature of the trip. What you do see is that in general, there's a reduction in the proportion of the trips that are for older adults that are just regular ambulatory, and a greater proportion of services that require assistance of one level or another. And you see wheelchair being considerably higher from the younger population, but stretcher being still relatively very low, even amongst the most frail community-dwelling older adults. So these things have face validity, if you will, in terms of what you would expect, but adds to the notion of why anyone would say, why is cost for services for older adults for NEMT is higher than younger individuals? You can point to items like this that would suggest that it's very practical that they would be costly, more costly. Okay, where are we with level of service? The majority of trips were older NEMT users were ambulatory, and I went over that. And the older adults and women, just over half, requiring wheelchairs. So there are other demographic patterns that I didn't show. And among the NEMT for this population, very few trips in Oklahoma required stretchers, which we found interesting. There's where I think there's where you kind of pursue. Is it scope of work, or is it something different about the nature of the service, or what that might account for that? This raised many more questions we could answer, and we're interested in pursuing them or have you think through with us on what they might mean. But for both states, almost a third of NEMT services for older adults, the use of accommodation of a wheelchair. So it's very serious in that regard.